our potential. It's exponential. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another podcast. We are in a new studio today, and I have Patrick with us. Pat, thanks for coming.
I'm here.
Heck yeah. And we got this new plant. Mm-hmm. It isn't a real Monstera, just off the rip, but we appreciate it anyways. I think it's kind of funny.
No water necessary, just glue and rocks, it seems.
Yeah, it gives us the aesthetic, though, which is nice.
Yeah. It really makes it feel like a jungle in here.
Yeah. So anyways, Pat is an amazing human. He is multifaceted. He works with trees. He does tree trimming, so he could help you with that if you need help with that. Mm-hmm. He understands, you know, permaculture and a lot of these deeper subjects that we talk about on the show. And he also is really into these teachings that created the Venus Project in Florida. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
So I think we should get into that, too, because I enjoy talking to you about that.
Yeah, I think the topics you sent me are great.
Okay.
Where to start?
Yeah. Like, do you want to get in? Like, where were you? Where were you born and raised? How'd you get into all this, Pat?
Mushrooms.
Wow. Yeah.
It's the truth.
Talk about it. Really?
Yeah. I don't. I mean, obviously, our life is a conglomeration of experiences, but I would say single-handedly that when I bumped into mushrooms, it led me down this very memorable path that took me from human that was just like reacting to the world around me and just living to a human that was looking for way more understanding and more peace in my life and more of a connection with everything. And that wasn't even on my radar, you know, in my mind. It wasn't even a thing.
You weren't seeking it out.
I didn't even know that that was to be sought out. The closest thing to any kind of enlightenment or deep understanding that I think that I would have ever had up until about 23 was like maybe thinking of like Mr. Miyagi or something, you know?
Right.
Just like some dude that's like wax on, wax off.
Yeah, and you weren't, I didn't seek it out like that too. It wasn't on my radar.
But didn't even know.
It changed the game for me as well in a lot of ways. So tell people about that. When was that?
I was 23. I had gotten out of a 4-year relationship where, you know, I thought I knew what I was doing. Like, oh, I'm with this person. And then you get married, then you did this or whatever. Whatever basic conditioning I got from my culture around me. And I ended that relationship with my partner. We ended it. And when I came back to Florida from Oregon, because I was on this kind of sabbatical, I've been hit with this reality check of like, oh man, I don't have this figured out. At the same time,
I don't have the answer.
Yeah, like, oh shit. Well, I gotta,
dude. I had a similar moment at 22, 23 too.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought of the whole, yeah, but go on, dude. So interesting.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Hit the brakes. Kind of like had this moment where I was like, I gotta like experience some stuff. And so I came back to Florida. I linked up with my best friend, Asner, who is really good with people. And while I was gone, he took our party days and our networking of getting different friends to just hang out together. And he created a business out of it. And he was hosting parties and events at different bars and venues. And when I got back, he said, you know, jump on this with me. And so
what was the concept? Like the
concept was like bar takeovers, places that needed more customers, more traffic, anything. They would sit down with us and we'd come up with like a night, whether it be like a kill the keg or a wet t-shirt contest or a, you know, a paint party or a foam party, or just like we'd bring DJs, dancers, hype people to
get
the
crowd
going.
You'd
promote it. Yeah. We just kind of turned it into a party. Next thing you know, like all the youth in our area was coming to every event he threw. And I was helping along with two of my other friends to just like kind of help him do this. And so we started making some money and I didn't have any worry of paying rent at that time because I'd been staying at my parents' house. And so I hit the brakes in life from the relationship. I had been given this opportunity to enter entrepreneurship with my friend, to make money on our own time, to not be stressed out by like demands and stuff. We only worked a few days a week. And at the same time, I had finished an unfinished like AS degree or something, and I need like one weird class, what are the when you get to pick liberal art, what's the classes where it's all different types you can pick from?
It's been a while.
I picked philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had this amazing teacher, Jared Kierkegaard, I think. It's hard to say his name, but he...
Philosophy.
Yeah, and it was an applied philosophies class. So philosophy really applying to life. And he was a cool guy. He did like, he kind of trekked across the country almost as like just a tramper on the road with a backpack, you know, being looked at as like some vagrant or like homeless guy, when really he's like this dude getting his master's degree in philosophy, just exploring life before he settles down into this. And he's got all these very interesting life experiences about how he's been looked at as a very intellectual person, and he's been people across the road to not be next to him. You know, he's been in big cities in the middle of the desert. And so he was very articulate and smart about how he went to teach these philosophical principles. And it was the first time in my life I really started thinking philosophy. Now, I'm sharing all these things because they wrap up into one moment when I was 23. So I hit the brakes on the relationship. I don't know what's going on. I got entrepreneurship. I got money coming in with less stress, and it's super chill environment. Mm. I'm exploring entrepreneurship, thinking outside the box. I meet this guy that gets me into philosophy. And at the same time, I had wanted to try different recreational substances. I was in this party scene. I had done no drugs up in that time. I had no idea about it.
Interesting. And
people would talk about these things. People would talk about problems with them or things they like about them or experiences they had. And I was like, I don't know what to say. I don't know anything about these things.
Yeah.
So I kind of wisely, since I really cherish my mind, I know that's probably my best attribute. I didn't want to do anything that would potentially harm that. So I kind of spent time thinking about what things I wanted to try, and I tried a lot of different recreational substances, and none of them really hit me in a way where I was like, this is something I need. This is something that I've been missing out on. Everything was like, all right, I get it, but not really worth it. But mushrooms, when I tried them, I was like, bookmark. So after I finished trying those different things, I went back and I'm like, I'm going to spend some time with this. I have free time. I said I'd stayed at my parents' house. At that time, they'd also got a lake house somewhere, and they were spending a lot of time away. So I'd have months, you know, at this house by myself with no rent, no one even living there other than me, no stressors. And I had this open-mindedness from the relationship that ended, philosophy now, entrepreneurship, the free time, the space, and all these things lined up into one moment. And then I started doing mushrooms. And because I had all that space to integrate every time I did a trip, and I spent a lot of time reading trip reports and a lot of information before I even started doing it, I got into it in a very intentional way, and it methodically just led me down this path of like, oh, this is something I need to examine. And I'd go and do some things. I'd go to random meetup groups or go to a park, or go to a flea market and think about these topics while I'm watching life happen around me. And then every few weeks or a month, I would plan this trip in the darkness or, you know, a certain spectacle that the populace is doing, whether it be an event or something that I sit back and on mushrooms, watch it and just kind of like let the experience accumulate in my mind. And from that journey, that 4 to 8 month journey, like completely reoriented my whole inner belief system, my whole idea of consciousness, my whole idea of just being in general.
In what ways? And that's it. And by the way, that's really interesting, because it is like to give you the space to integrate it. Because you're saying you had all these party scenes going on and stuff. It wasn't that. You're saying it was more of like respecting it.
The party scenes brought the substances into my awareness.
Yes.
And then I was fortunate enough to have this respect for my mind. A lot of people they respect themselves and their mind, but they don't really, like, they're not like, I can't mess this up. This is my only thing. Some people have looks. Some people are strong. Some people have a business that's being passed down from their parents that makes them feel secure. We have these securities that make us feel like this is at least the thing I got.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate for that to be my mind. I was always a funny guy. And
you are funny.
Thank you.
All of the above.
I was kind of
were you?
Class clown until I met my best friend, Asner.
Asner. Cool. Shout out Asner. That's a cool name.
Yeah. He's Filipino. He had a mohawk back when we were doing party stuff. So he's pretty big. He's a big Filipino guy with a mohawk. And so like meet him once and you never forget. Yeah.
So wait, why did you stop becoming the class clown when you met him?
I stopped becoming the class clown. I'm like second tier, second string quarterback class clown.
Really? He's got it on lock. Really?
Yeah, the Filipinos, man. They just kind of ragging each other. They joke all the time.
Yeah,
they're like professional, and they got no like. They all do karaoke.
Really?
You know how many people are like, oh, I can't sing in front of people. Uh-huh. If you're Filipino, you're like, you're doing karaoke.
Like regularly.
Yeah, you're just really? In the you're chilling with grandma's over and you're like, oh, put on karaoke.
Karaoke is a lot of fun, actually, when you like let your guard down.
Well, you're a musician and a singer. You've had experiences Science. That have blessed you, though, with the comfortability to come out of your shell and sing in front of people.
Yeah.
These are all experiences that kind of, I think, require, they require like a Lego pieces of experience to make someone feel comfortable or a space that makes them feel comfortable to do that.
It's so true. Yeah. It is a blessing to be able to, riff. Like, we'll freestyle. You just, it's a heart-centered thing, not a mind thing, you know? It's just flow. But anyways, I digress. Flow. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
So, but Pat, so thank you for sharing about that. I didn't think we'd start with mushrooms, but I love that we did.
I know. I kind of thought, like, we could get to this after trees or something, but to be honest, nothing that I'm interested in now and nothing that I'm doing would be in my life if it wasn't for those things.
Interesting.
There's a lot of people solving PTSD problems, end-of-life problems. I mean, there's an immense amount of studies on it, and soon enough, it's going to be pretty readily available with therapeutic guidance.
Yeah.
But I did it the old-fashioned way, and I don't even necessarily say that everyone needs to do what I do, because how many people can really afford the luxury and time to do what I did? You know, and I'm grateful for that. And so it helps me also not judge people's inability to find space in their life to do those things. But I am very fortunate that I had the time, and I was subjected to psilocybin mushrooms in a way that wasn't pushed on me by, like, you know, a dysfunctional crowd of people or something using it to, like, goof off or
which happens.
Hook up or, you know, be the coolest person around, whatever it was. I had friends that were into music and they were loving the scene and having really cool, amazing times using these things at these festivals or events. But yeah, I lucked out in the way that I was subjected to it and at the time in my life that it all happened. And because all those things happened at once, it gave me the perfect container to figure stuff out, just sit with things until I felt like I understood different aspects of my life rather than just being.
Yeah. Yeah, being like blindly, you're saying.
Yeah, which leads us into nature.
Beautiful segue.
Yes.
Yes.
A great example right here. Our friend,
Mr. Monstera.
Yeah, what would be like a good first name and alliterative of like M starting name for Mr. Monstera? Actually, I like that.
Mr. Mighty Monstera.
Mr. Monstera seems so professional.
He's getting corny.
He never changes. He's always a constant. He's like, you know what I mean? He's like an anchor point.
He's a constant.
So yeah, so the mushrooms to, I think most people have this experience when they have high doses of intentional, good set and setting mushroom experiences is that we're kind of part of the whole. The whole system is working together. There's a documentary about a guy that tried to recreate a toaster one time, and it's like it was a nightmare for him. You can get a toaster for $15 at Walmart.
Yeah.
They're just pumping them out somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you try to make a toaster on your own, you're like, oh my God, it's like cost them $1,000 to get the parts made, all these things.
Right.
So even just down to the silliest things like a toaster, not to leave out like amazing philosophical phrases and quotes you hear all the time and cool art you see and cool ways of living that just get imposed on you by being around people. All this stuff is forming you. And after my mushroom trips, after I really started feeling like I was coming into a homeostasis and like a balance in life and what I would call my own like personal little harmony or enlightenment, not to say enlightenment in the way like I know all the answers, but just a sense of self-awareness and the ability to be like, I don't know things. And that made me feel like I knew what I was doing. It's like, just by saying the things that I don't know is something that I don't know, it means that I'm in this like mode of truth now.
Right.
And so they led me into this thinking of like helping the world. And I was like, what could I do? And I kind of put my ego on hold after one of these really deep psilocybin trips / meditations. And I was like, I wonder if anyone's come up with like a global solution. I wonder if anyone's like out there that has just dedicated their life to this global solution idea. And so I started looking and I was like all over forums, like anyone come up with a global solution? Anyone come up with solutions for all the problems in one way? And it sounded kind of weird. Some people would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then one person, I don't even know who this is, was just like posted on a forum somewhere. He's like, check out the Venus Project. It was just that. I don't think what's that. I looked it up and I found this guy, Jacques Fresco, who died like 7, maybe 8 years ago at 102 years old. and he lived through the Great Depression. And this man dedicated his whole life to coming up with a global solution. His whole life he dedicated to understanding life, understanding the
solution to what?
The world's problems. Mm. As silly as that sounds, and as grandiose as it sounds.
Yeah.
This was a Einstein, Tesla level engineer thinking dude that has also had conversations with Einstein in his time.
Really? Where is he from? He was from Europe and he came over here?
I don't know his exact background. We could look it up or we could like bling.
Jacques Fresco. We'll put a
pin. Yeah.
So you always
But he grew up, they came to the States and he was like a little child in the States during the Great Depression. And so he remembers as a child. Let's say when you're like 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, when you go from just basic sentence to like start to thinking and your mind's forming. He's looking around at people on the street, sitting outside window shops with like blankets and all these things inside. And they're like freezing outside. Food, but there's food right on the other side of a window.
Yeah.
So he was seeing a human with this need for a basic necessity and the basic necessity 5 feet from them with this weird infrastructure that didn't allow it to be like transactional. And
he said, we have to fix that.
He was just like, this is obviously off.
But by the way, Pat, I love that like thought.
Yeah.
Because that is a huge problem, the wealth gap. And I've had that exact same thought. I remember being on the road, like literally traveling like your professor friend, like, you know, sleeping in parks and stuff, just like finding my way, traveling, working on farms. And anyways, I'd look at these big hotels and I'd be like, there's probably an empty room in there.
Yeah.
Like, there's probably a lot of them.
A ton of them.
And it doesn't make any sense. And like, and obviously it's a bigger problem than I could solve right now, but this dude, Jacques Fresco, doesn't think so. What is his thoughts on it? Because it's a huge problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not about snapping your finger and having it fixed. But the cool thing is in a moment in your life, in a little tiny period of time, we can orient ourselves towards that solution. And in that situation, you're being the change you wish to see the world, and you kind of are shifting for your own self. When you do it, you shift your whole life. When you look at the world in a way that's like, oh, at the foundational level, we just kind of like, we did our best back in the day, and now since we're way smarter, we should probably go back and redo it. And that's a hard thing for anyone to grasp, because the idea of changing the way we set up communities and live in the general sense is like, whoa, wait, what?
Yeah. And it goes against like what we have, because we're attached to.
Yeah. And so Jacques Fresco.
But if it's for the best.
What is?
Like just the new practices, new systems, new culture. But anyway.
Yeah.
Well,
whatever makes more sense is going to be for the best. But a lot of us get to a point where we go from child to adult and we have to like start doing things. And the way our environment's set up now is like when you shift into that adulthood, you just start doing so much stuff that you don't have this time for your intuition or your silence anymore. You don't have this time to like explore these real innovative past the Maslow's hierarchy of needs type thoughts. You know what I mean? So you just kind of like have been developed with the whole environment around you and how it works as what is the truth. And if you don't have any classes or you don't have a moment in which someone challenges you to think about changing that or coming up with a better design, which is a really rare conversation to bump into. It's not like you're sitting down at an Applebee's bar and the guy next to you is like, you ever think about what we could really do to change everything tangibly, you know, instead of complain about it? It's just not like it's not a normal thought. And so that's why I felt so...
People are in their shit. They're just in their...
They are. We're bogged down.
You go from
being a child asking life's most important questions at like 6 years old when someone gives you this funny answer, and you don't revisit it. Because by the time you get to 15, you're like worried about what soccer team you're going to be on, or, you know, what friends you're hanging out with, or which kind of bike you got.
What major? What's your major?
Yeah. What are you going to do? I don't know. I haven't done anything ever, so I really don't know. But let me pick something. Yeah. Next thing you know, they're like, don't love their job.
Right. It's like, who would have thought?
And then you have like this income coming in. You got bills. You got a car. You got a Jeep Cherokee that you just had to have. And then you're paying bills on that. You got a house, which is like incredibly expensive. And you're like, I could pay all my bills. But if I switch, if I take a couple months off to try to figure my life out, everything will crumble. And so you're bogged down by these things.
It's interesting, bro, what you're saying. Like, I guess this whole idea of like taking a pause. A lot of business like leaders and stuff, they say, hey, just literally shut your doors down for a week. And go figure it out, and then show up in a better way next week and have a better product. And it's kind of the same thing with life you're talking about.
Yeah, we don't have it built in to our how our society works right now. We don't have it built in to have these moments. And a lot of people want to think it's conspiracy. And I don't necessarily hold that point of view. I think everyone's doing their best. Yeah, I think everyone's been doing their best forever. And in a moment where you find a specific individual that's chosen to lie on a study and jeopardize human lives, in that person's own little reality, they think they're saving employees' jobs or their own well-being, and they've never been blessed with this spiritual approach to life that makes them feel connected to everything. So they're kind of in their own little narrow view of the world. I still think separation. That person's, he's doing his best. Even if he's killing 100,000 people, it's crazy to say.
It is crazy. I laugh because it's crazy.
Yes. And I'm not saying that we could perceive him doing a better job or find ways that he could do things to get a win-win, but he can't see that. And the way that that person lives makes it unavailable for us to really get in to change it. But I do think everything's doing its best.
It's interesting what you're saying, like the whole, the idea that that guy makes a decision to, whatever it is, start a civil war in some country, whatever you're talking about, horrific.
Just release a medicine or a product that might kill a bunch of infants or cause a disease.
Whatever it is, exactly, the motive, I don't know. But like that is, it's an interesting thought, but I just to sit with the idea that we are capable of that. Like that's what Jordan Peterson talks about. Like facing, there were people in the Holocaust who were working with the government, like all excited to help what's going on. It's just like, makes me sick to my stomach.
Which comes back to the main principle, unless you finish.
Thanks for saying that. And all I'm saying is it is a better feeling to not think it's like some conspiracy. It's just like literally these people are lost, bro.
I don't think you can be at peace with life in a whole if you think that a bunch of it's out to get you. That's not to say let your guards down. That's unwise.
Facts.
So when I say everyone's doing their best, that doesn't mean I'm letting the child predator come over for meatloaf and stay in my spare bedroom.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to treat them like someone who's evil. I'm going to treat them like a damaged human that hasn't had the right setup to be able to heal from that and grow from that.
Super mature, dude.
So the main point
is
when I found Jacques Fresco, he's a very wise man. He explored indigenous tribes mostly, which is makes his philosophy really sink in with me, because when you observe humans doing things in a completely different culture, you realize what parts are human and what parts are culture. And you start to very quickly realize that we are our environment. You could be raised a headhunter and think nothing's wrong with it.
It's so true.
He has this beautiful, like, kind of like way of explaining. Jacques would explain, like, you know, you meet a headhunter and he's like, oh, you know I have a head on the wall. And you'd be like, oh, you feel bad about the fact that you've killed a man? He goes, no, my brother has more heads than me. I only have one. You know what I mean? They don't have that place in them to think that it's bad, because that's not their culture. So much of us is our environment and the area that we're raised in. That's why he realized it's so important to revamp how we live in community. And so that ties into this bigger, more abstract view of nature as this whole thing. Mm. Some people call God, some people call universe, some people call whatever, but the Tao say a lot of cool things about nature and aligning yourself with nature, being at peace with nature, and also realizing that everything is nature can put you in this beautiful, harmonious place. And he realized that our environment is everything. It shapes humans more than anything else. We spend countless hours talking about all these little things we have to change, when really it's like, you just live weird.
Right.
Yeah. And so when you're
in a tenement on, because it's the environment. It's the environment. And by the way, to your point, you said, and through community and like restructuring that. So go on.
Yeah. So then you start thinking about the basic necessities. And one of the main principles, we'll go over it. I'd say you need shelter, or to feel like wherever you're laying down at night is safe and healthy. And you don't want it to cause a bunch of stress for you also. And then you got food and water. With those two things, if you had those in a healthy way, clothing or whatever, just the basic amenities, I actually don't think even healthcare is a thing that a lot of people would have to worry about. I think if you were in a stress-free community and environment, and not stress-free completely, but something that's set up to be stress-free, and you had healthy food and you weren't stressed out by keeping up with the Joneses, like having to work every day to pay these bills for these things you don't really need, you would find that a lot of healthcare just dissipates in terms of necessity. Because a lot of our healthcare comes from these main fundamentals being out of whack.
Stress.
And it's so metaphorical to a garden.
Yeah.
It's so metaphorical to a garden.
Big time.
The whole time I was learning this, I kept thinking garden, 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 garden.
Talk about that, because it's true.
It's so true. Like, if you're trying to grow one thing, you find out, like, wow, how much faster and easier does it grow when its whole environment is for the cause, not just like pavers everywhere and then just one patch of thing growing or whatever it is.
Big time difference.
It's huge. The mycelium network gets to root into place. The soil starts working together. You know, you have this balance of the bugs and all the different animals that are associated with the property.
And it's beautiful too.
They just take care of themselves. And you're like, well, how does it do that? And then you step back and you're like, it's been doing that forever. This is how it all works.
Right.
The moment we think it needs to look a certain way or be a certain way is when it seems like it's not all working. But these are beliefs that we've just constructed because we can say anything with words and then tie ourselves to it.
Yeah, we might not understand it totally. Yes.
So Jacques Fresco, when I found him, gave me this new way of looking at life. And his whole principle was developing communities that were centered around making sure those basic necessities were provided. Ideally, his thoughts were you provide a community with a place that provides shelter, water, and food. At the basic premise, at least.
And that is that it?
Without you worrying about anything else.
Cool.
Like, worrying about those things. Worrying about getting money to get those things. Everything else is, like, up to you. And I imagine that something like capitalism can stay in that way, beautifully.
Cool.
It's when we mess with the basic necessities and these things that are fundamental to human lives being healthy that things get off. And it's
so how can we, because that's a good point you just made, like we could still have the free market and freedom and
totally
all this, but like how would we be able to not be taken advantage of? Someone come to the community and try to whatever, take advantage of them,
like what, hit you with sticks?
Yeah, that, or just, you know, some zoning BS regulations, or just
well, like I said, I don't think we live in a world of conspiracy. So I do think there's been all these little incentives and pushes to make things harder, to make maybe realtors make more money or whatever it's going to be. But at the end of the day, there's not a big conspiracy, and the counties are cool. I mean, honestly, they just want things up to Florida code. A lot of our rules make sense. We want buildings that aren't going to like crumble or tumble into the neighbor's house. You know, you don't want something that's dangerous for the land around it.
Fires and pollution, all those things. That's
what
it's for.
We're doing a pretty good job. When you actually sit down to break down the rules that you and the loops you got to jump through, it's like, okay, other countries wish they had this because they have all these problems.
You got it. So we're at least at an okay baseline. And you're saying just...
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to want to mess with people that aren't, you know, messing with anyone else.
Yeah.
There's no real reason for it. But
okay,
but you're still part of the community. We have laws. We have cops. Anyone messes with you just like they would mess with you today, you handle it the same way.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a shift overnight. It's going to be a gradual shift of communities being built centered around efficiency for the basic necessities, not for profit. And those are going to be built by groups coming together, I think. And the profit that comes out of these communities is going to be put into making the communities affordable rather than making one person, you know, big bellied, full and happy on their beach house. They're one of six beach houses. You know what I mean?
Which, I know what you mean.
But if you want six beach houses, go ahead. But but I just don't think that you're going to find ultimate happiness with all these things that you're managing rather than helping your community around you be healthy.
Yeah, I love that. And by the way, I totally agree. We take care of our people before we go spend all our money in Aruba or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Imagine 50 wealthy people and everyone else is poor and their kids can only hang out with each other because as soon as they leave the walls of their fortress, it's like everyone's like, give me money, you know? Like,
it's like Mad Max.
You don't even let your kids explore the world because now everyone out there is dangerous, you know? Because you're like, well, I mean, I don't need this $1 billion, but if the world goes to shit, I'm going to need it, right? I'm going to need this billion. But it's like, you want to live in a world like that?
Dude, exactly. What you're saying is a lot of sense. And is making a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Jeez. And I guess it's key, like all those profits, like, cause more people got to think long-term like that and think, cause that's just what you're saying is like, hey, let's put all these profits that we're making into making our environment, our system stronger and more resilient and better.
Well, I think if we oriented profits around making the basic necessities cheaper and cheaper with the goal of getting to a point where it's free, the whole country would be able to unite around that. It's undebatable. Everyone wants those things to be taken care of. It doesn't infringe on beliefs or religion or anything. It's just like, this is how I put it. And I'm going to go back to the garden example because this sets it home for me. In a garden, if you had not good soil, not good light,
yes,
or not enough water, you would settle those things before you worried about any other problems. If your garden wasn't working right, your leaves looked weird, something wasn't working, and you were like, well, I think maybe I should play drums to it, or I should put a copper-infused pipe in the ground, or whatever these extra things are that might help.
Yeah.
But like, you're going to continually have a problem unless you go back and make sure those three basic fundamentals of a garden are good. And right now, our basics for being a human, free time, which is the one thing that I bring up that most people never talk about. I think we need free time. Mm. If you're living a life where you have 2 days off, and one of those days is you doing laundry, so you have work clothes for the next 5 days, right? You might have a kid too you got to take care of. You got things you got to do.
Yeah.
All week you've been putting it off because you get out at 5 and stuff closes, so you got to go pay that bill, or you got to go down to like the store to get that part for the door that's been broken for 2 weeks, right? So you got one day where you're maintaining, and then you have another day where you can explore your mind and explore your soul and explore life and grow as a person. But guess what people do after 5 days of working and then a sixth day of doing your chores? You want to sit on your ass and you want to watch Netflix because you're beat. Your energy has been just like drained. And our economic system right now has, not conspiratorially, I just think it's numbers, has pulled as much work out of a human as they can before they freak out.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Maybe. Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying.
Well, think about if you owned a business, real quick.
My question to you, though, is how do people go to where you're at? Because what you're talking about is really exciting, and people want that. But to someone who's like, hey, Patrick, cool for you.
Stuck in the swamp.
How do you do it? Yeah.
Yeah, so first, most people stuck in the swamp haven't had a moment in their life to sit and to reorient their beliefs.
Give yourself the permission is what you're saying.
So
I love it.
I don't know. Anyone that's watching this probably is on this path already of like discovery. So they're kind of in a different realm than people stuck in the swamp. So we're kind of, it's a bit confusing what we're talking about here. I think the people that are in the swamp are going to be helped by people like us.
And when
the
people we reorient that are interested in their beliefs, things, you're saying.
I think if we change environments, they will follow. And more people will hit these trigger points of self-discovery. But you can't really take someone from the swamp and just snap them out of it. Unless you got like
sometimes
a bunch of money. But it's kind of inefficient to pick one person at a time and just like give them everything and spend time with them until they're good.
I guess I just was trying to cut. I didn't mean to cut you up. I was just trying to get to like, how do we give them hope, you know? And
okay.
I think you're hitting on it in a lot of ways.
So for the people on this journey, there's things we could do. And the people in the swamp, yes, we can give them hope. And what I think would give them hope is a group of people committing to an overall cause that encompasses a lot of the topics we talk about on people talk about on your podcast. Mm-hmm. But the overall goal would be to two things: create new communities that are built around efficiency for these basic necessities and not for profit. And the other one is retrofit communities that exist already with the basic necessities in a healthy way, which would mean like an example would be like taking a neighborhood and installing like a really healthy water source locally in their area there for everyone to share, and also taking a lot or two lots and turning them into like a permacultured food forest. Maybe places that have HOAs can start shifting their HOA community centers into places that also have, like, most of them have a kitchen already, but they can change some of the land around the community center into a food forest, and the kitchen become a prep/store space for the food. And so you can start not only supplementing your small micro communities with food that's healthy for you, but take money out of that expensive day-to-day task of buying food for yourself and your family. And so you're making it easier to get by with the bills. I also think that communities oriented around these things start to suck each other less dry for money. I think overall you'd find funds become more readily available when you have not only laws changing, but also community members wanting to help each other because they're part of this thing now. And so in the communities that we would build, you would build them to be the cheapest possible way you can. I really like inflatable cement dome homes.
But strong builds.
But you make sure that all the components of a structure are met.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not about maybe.
Okay.
It's not about image or aesthetics maybe as much as it is about the fundamentals. So a dome home is thermal resistant. There's other homes you could do too. And I just think a tiny home in general, if it can hit Florida building code, run it. If you're getting a place to live that's $30,000 rather than $300,000, that's going to be the biggest move you can make. If you're not already in a home, or if you're in a home and you want to sell it and move into a different way of living, smaller space, less stress on you, more free time for you to be a human and give back to the community around you is going to be a tenfold difference in how you experience life. But a dome home is thermal resistant, fungal resistant, wind resistant, and it's very insulated, depending on how you build it. And so in Florida, we don't really have anything to worry about natural disaster-wise other than hurricanes. And I'd rather be in a hurricane than a tornado. It's really more of an infrastructural issue. I've lived in Florida my whole life. A lot of people in other states think hurricanes are like the super tornado. It's not picking people up and throwing them, but it is a rough on the infrastructure. It'll knock street lights down, take out power grids. Really old and not very good built, like trailers and stuff, will have things putting holes in them and stuff. But it's not like the most dangerous thing. But a dome home has no issue with wind at all. You would never have to worry about it. And roofs are like this nightmare here in Florida with insurance and getting them. They're so expensive to upkeep, and every once in a while you got to do it.
You're right.
A dome home that's out of cement is like, you could pressure wash it every once in a while if you want, but you don't have to do anything. It makes it so much more simple and less money and less energy of the whole to maintain a house when these typical houses that we have now are just, it's like a nightmare to keep up with.
Yeah, you're right, dude.
It's part of the problem.
And okay, amazing. So, and by the way, the millennials are starting to think about this stuff, you know? Like, we don't care about the facade of the home and all this stuff. I mean,
it's an economical consequence.
Yeah. So we build these, yes, we build these communities and we retrofit communities that we already have.
Because we're not going to just all leave our houses that are already built, right?
Dude, imagine, exactly. We have these towns. That's urban abundance, baby.
As these communities get less busy, like West Palm and Stuart, these areas we live in, right?
Yeah.
Because people are shifting into like maybe a little out west into these communities that are, maybe you're paying $800 a month for a place to live in your land, mm-hmm, rather than $2,000, you know? It's a giant shift in most people's
lives.
And
now you could grow your own food. You could have chicken eggs.
Now, what happens to real estate? Real estate kind of gets more competitive because not as many people are crowding up the homes, right? So you're going to have a real estate drop in the normal housing area, which makes it easier to get into those for some people that want to live that life.
Oh, okay.
Do you see what I'm saying? Right now, it's so busy. Someone try to live in Stuart, it's like everything's so expensive.
It's crazy.
You can charge whatever you want because people need to live somewhere.
Dude, imagine having like a Frenchman's Creek or something, one of these neighborhoods that's like, you know what I mean?
What's a Frenchman's Creek?
It's like, you know, they're one of these developments that are around here with the gated community and the HO. And there's golf courses, the whole nine, the clubhouse, the golf carts.
Love it.
I grew up, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
The pool?
There's, multiples, all of it. And by the way, all the amenities are great. I think we need to have those in our lives.
They fit the people that are at those places.
Great. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it gets crazy, these million dollar setups. But my point is, imagine taking those resources. I've thought about this, these $50 million clubhouses, putting half of that, 25 mil, towards a garden for the community and like a sustainable farm.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, that's the future.
It's going to happen.
It's going to.
Because we're going to make some that showcase what we're talking about.
Yes.
We're going to have retrofitted communities that are already doing this. People are, you know, they're paying you to come in and make their landscaping an edible landscape, mm-hmm, right?
On a small scale, right.
But it's
great.
Neighbors are seeing it. They're doing it. So they're becoming that food forest throughout the whole environment. Jupiter Farms is like an awesome example, right? It's just like you go in there and you just feel like this whole community is a food forest almost. It's getting there.
Dude, I love that. And guys, it's like a big network of, like, that's what I think of it. It's a network of yards that we could all access.
And these rich people, which have these beautiful, they have plenty of HOA funds. They can do all kinds of cool stuff. They can pay people like us to come in and help. They have these different lawns for dogs to poop on. Yeah. They can take one of them, right, and start small and turn it into a place where, you know, every week they're making a meal out of something from it, or it's just a great activity for these senior citizens to be involved in. Like, oh my God, getting the soil under your fingertips and playing with plants and getting vitamin D from the sun. It gives you this perfectly organic experience to get this physical and mental therapy. And it doesn't have to be this thing that replaces all their food, but slowly it's going to get there because it's better. No one wants to go back to worse when they've experienced better. Once you've eaten anything that's actually grown from the ground, most people, I swear I lived to 23, barely knowing it. My dad grew tomatoes one time. He grew some pineapples. He grew a few things in the back. It was like, we had an orange tree. It was like the Mecca. Anytime we had one of those things that was ready, it was 10 times better than anything we had.
Yeah.
And to this day, it's been the same. Anything you get from the store, whether it be Walmart or Publix or Wawa or wherever you get your groceries, it's nowhere near picking a tomato off a vine and eating it. And the biggest thing for me is the studies they've done about nutritional value, just diminishing, like the nutrients in the fruit and the veggies break down pretty quickly. After 48 hours, I think a study showed that almost like 40 to 70% of the nutritional value just breaks down to a point where it's not absorbable by the body anymore. So you're eating more matter.
Excuse me.
You're getting less goods from it. So yeah, we have to make sure our water's good. We got to make sure our food's good. And we got to make sure we're not too stressed out to just find a shelter to live. And until we figure out a group goal to change that, we're always going to have problems. And in terms of the problems in the world, once we do that for ourselves here, we can help people do it other places. And we'll eliminate the reason for other countries to hate us or want to fight each other. A lot of the war comes from scarcity of basic resources. Any country you go to that's just fallen apart, people will do anything if they don't have a place to live or any food to eat.
That's the last, yeah.
Living in a town of rubble, you'll join a militia if they have bread. You know what I mean? You'll do anything to survive.
Right.
And so we have to come up with a global goal that settles these basic necessities. The garden of life has to be good soil, good light, and good water before we do anything fancy.
That's it, man. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it is a different mindset, right, Pat? Like what we're talking about, just it's all, we're all connected. Because a lot of people are like, hey, this is my land. You know, it's a different, so like we do have to break through some of these blocks, but not, I mean, not that I'm trying to take away private property or anything. That's not what I'm saying, but it's a different, for example, this, we have star fruits coming off the tree.
More than any human could eat ever.
We have a lot of bananas, always, of fruits in our yard, and people are literally driving past us like looking, yeah, and they want to get in on it. And sometimes when I'll, you know, I'll go bring them.
That's it right there.
I'll just, and then
that's what I was about to say when you brought this topic up.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like we're just showing them, hey, this is how we do it. And you'd see in their eyes, like, what are you talking about? Like you're giving it to
abundance.
Me.
Abundance.
It's abundance.
The moment you have abundance of a resource, it's built into all of us to share. And no wealthy person is gonna spend extra time trying to figure out how to sell their extra coconuts for $4 at the market. You know what I mean? They're just gonna give it away. They take the ones they want. A lot of people don't even use their coconuts. A lot of fruit just doesn't even get used. There's loquat trees hidden through my city that are just decoration.
Yeah.
Full of loquats.
Loaded.
Loaded. And once you start learning, it's like your city becomes a treasure map. It becomes a scavenger hunt. Mm-hmm. And as you're driving around, you're like, is that a lychee tree? That's a huge lychee tree.
You're right.
Yeah. And it's fun. And so, yeah. So private property, whatever, even if you want to live in your own lane, people want good food right now. And the most closed-minded, bogged-down people, which we have compassion for, they like fruit. And just by helping them plant something and getting them to a point where they not only have now a little bit of healthy food and this cool interaction with an organism that's growing, their little baby of a tree that's becoming a big tree and will be with them throughout their life, you're generating this beautiful experience for their life. And every fruit tree I know pretty much gets to a point of abundance after a certain period of time.
That's right. There's more than you could ever eat.
And it gets addictive. And next thing you know, you don't want just bananas. You want to throw in some mulberries or some star fruit or some coconuts or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's addicting. And I think it's built into all of us. I just think in our modern culture over the last, you know, handful of decades, we've been grinding. We've been pushing technology. We've been just being the cogs in the wheel that have been getting everything turning. And we're coming to this point of AI and supreme technology that I think is now going to help us balance out all that excessive focus on advancement and get us back into a balance. Because none of us are going to be entirely happy until the world is in a somewhat of a harmonious state. You're never going to be so blissed out with kids dying and people suffering and people getting raped and abused and kidnapped and taken advantage of. And this is with me every day.
Yeah. At least all the projections on the media, the actual wars going on.
And most people just ignore it because they don't know how to process it. But if we can come up with a group goal, which I've been working on and plenty of people are thinking similar things, that makes an entire country and maybe even an entire populace of the world think that we have something to strive for, that's an answer for us all to actually live in a way that makes sense. I think that you can, that's the only thing I think you can unite humanity around. I think everything else you can unite chunks of humanity around, but until you're really thinking about how every human on this planet is part of one big human family and each of us, like a garden, need those basics before anything else, you're always going to have secondary consequences of that. And that was Jacques Fresco's entire principle. And that's why I think the man is worth looking into for anyone I meet. I don't know how many people I tell and they never look them up, but it's like
Jacques Fresco. Go check it out right now.
Check out thevenusproject.com. Check out Jacques Fresco.
Are you going to build one of these? What's the plan? Yeah.
Yeah. With AI, if I don't do it in real life. I mean,
yeah. How, what do you mean by that?
I mean, like in a year's time, maybe less, maybe a hair more, I'm going to be able to take this podcast and upload it into an AI, and it'll just make a video example of a city.
Gosh.
It'll make multiple.
But it can't build that.
But investors can.
But there we go. So you're going to build the model for the investor. Got it.
Yeah, let's say we designed a community.
Perfect.
Visually, everything's laid out. All the T's and I's are crossed, right? And it's, let's say, $160,000 mortgage to get your dome home, maybe a little space for storage and some land, like a quarter acre, half acre, something like that.
Yes.
And because you're saving so much cost on the building and your group of purchasing the land and the profit from developing the land into a 30 home community is not going into someone's pocket. Like if me and a group were designing this and we were paying ourselves, you know, just a basic wage to do this rather than millions of dollars of profit, you'll find that you can do these pieces of land for half the price of mortgages that are people paying now. So to start out, even if in this capitalistic world, investors would love to give loans out for, I think, real estate. Like land and property is like the safest loan, I'm pretty sure, in terms of investment.
Pat, to push back though, it's like, okay, what if I was an investor and they were like, what's in it for them? Like
a percent return.
A percent.
Just like the bank would do.
It's like a loan.
What's the interest for a bank to give you a mortgage? It's the same thing. But the bank is hoping that you can keep up your $2,400 a month on your property in your house when your job is making like $3,500, you know? I mean, like, you're right on the line and they're banking on it still.
Yeah.
But it's easier for someone to bank on a person that's making around the same money but only has to pay $900 now or $1,000 a month. It's much cheaper. Our biggest cost is coming from the profit of the builders and the houses, the actual structure costing more than we need them to cost.
Okay. I guess
does that make sense?
Yeah. We got to flesh out the model so you could be like, hey, here's all the benefits, because like, honestly, a lot of people, you're saying, oh, it's all these people want to give loans. It's hard to get loans right now because of this just tightening economy.
I
not
think
that it's not possible, but you got to be like, hey, well, here's the
well, here is
value.
Doesn't it make sense that it's hard to get a loan when you're doing the numbers on a person asking you for a loan? You're like, you barely make enough to pay all this. This is a bit of a risk for me.
Right.
It becomes less risky when you're like,
that's what they do.
You could pay this easy. And this is actually a cool model. And you have a list of people that want to get in if you don't pay your thing.
Okay. So you
we have 30 people and we have 10 person waiting list for anyone that reneges on their loan or whatever. There's really no risk. Mm. It's very simple. As a community of people, and the other thing is you don't have to talk about all the rewards in terms of people joining community, because 30 people, we're going to find those without having to like, we don't have to advertise. A lot of people want this right now.
So what you're saying, because I'm way into this.
Yeah.
I just want people to see what kind of what's going on, like in the value and stuff, because it's like 30 people on a community. Like, what does that even mean? I think a lot of people think apartment complex.
I'm thinking like gated community. Imagine gated community in
where
a sense.
They're like
they take a square of land. They lay it out with certain roads that make houses, but now we're oriented to be efficient to make it to, instead of cosmetically beautiful, we use geometric shapes and efficiency to lay it out in an easy way to print the houses. And we orient a lot of the land into a permaculture forest in the center. And we have a couple buildings that that take care of a certain things like a kitchen, community space, garage.
Right.
And with those, you can handle most of the stuff you would need to do in a community. And so it's going to happen in different ways.
Shared tools.
Yeah. And
I guess, the whole because if like those 30 people are all focused on the same mission, pretty powerful.
And they don't even have to really focus on it as much. If they're just into the things, they're going to be part of the community. Right. All they have to do is pay their loan, but just agree to live in a dome home. Realistically, though, the first 30 people in one of these communities are all going to be on this stuff that we're talking about. We want to grow our own food. We want a place to share space with people. We want to share meals with people. We want a sense of community. We want that neighborhood feel back that my dad grew up with, that I kind of grew up with, that slowly drifted away. We have different languages and intermingling in communities, which is awesome, and it'll balance out. But the last 10, 20 years, a lot of communities have been riddled with different ethnic backgrounds, making it hard for people to communicate with each other, whether it be language-based, whether it be culture-based, and it makes it feel harder and harder for people to invite someone over for a barbecue, you know? You just don't know about their culture, and you don't know sometimes their language. People like my dad, you know, he's not going to learn Spanish. And so it's very hard for him to discuss things with someone that only speaks Spanish. And we grew up in a neighborhood that turned from almost no one there to then just a bunch of your typical Americans, different colors, but people that spoke English, to a lot of people that spoke Spanish. And I love it. I'm not anti it, but okay. It does create a dissonance in a community. And so, how did I get on this point?
Neighbors.
Yeah, this neighborhoodly feel when you have people
communication
around you,
I think that's what you're getting at. Like,
God, my dad's favorite stories.
We talk to each other.
Neighborhoodly feel. Yeah,
we talk to each other.
And now I got to get out of my bed, and if I want to hang out with Jack, I got to drive 40 minutes because you know rent is so expensive that I'm living up here. He's living down there. This person's living over there. It's a task to get in my car, spend the money on gas, go all the way to someone's house. When, man, you get up and you walk outside and you go over to your neighbor's house and start helping them pick loquats and while you're talking about stuff, it's like so much more organic, so much less energy used, so much less stress, and it's so much healthier on your body when you're making it easy for yourself to get into physical tasks, healthy mental tasks, and healthy food, less stress, more free time. These are the things that we need as humans, and we have such an ironclad grip on the fact that we need to work 5 or 6 days a week and hustle and make as much money as we can, that if you abide by that, you do good in this culture right now. But it's mostly because most of us haven't had a time to step back and reanalyze what we really want. And anyone that you've ever heard that you look up to that seems prophetic or really wise, they're all on this. They're not going absolutely crazy. And the people that are hustling are doing what they love. Mm. You know what I mean? The ones that are putting a lot of time into things, you think of maybe like a Gary Vee or Tony Robbins, right? These people, they're like
type A. Yeah.
They're crushing stuff they love.
Yeah.
It's just like you out in your garden.
That's it.
You know what I mean?
Crushing stuff they love. Yeah.
Do we have time for trees?
Let's okay. talk trees.
Yeah, brother. we have a global solution for the world. So that's pretty good. We did that.
Let's get on it, by the way. Like we need to get on it.
What is?
We need to get this community going.
Yes, well,
trees, you're on it.
I think there's an element of patience too to that, you know? There's an element of there's a beauty to AI. I really think it's going to have a giant factor in us launching these things. And I think a lot of us right now in the realms of permaculture, housing, 3D printing housing, zoning, all these things I'm watching shift right now, and it almost feels like it makes sense that we're not going nuts today freaking out trying to make it happen. It's coming very soon,
right?
But I think AI is going to be a giant principle of it.
Got it.
But get into trees.
Yeah.
Since you have an audience that's really into permaculture and their land and their trees and nature, I have been climbing trees. I've been professionally climbing trees and pruning them and learning about them and healthily pruning them for about 2 years now. Ever since COVID, I was like, I got to do something. I got to run my own thing. I don't want to be let go. And I love outside. So I learned everything I can. Right now, there's so much information online to learn how to climb trees. And there's so many great arborists that not only give you all the information that they think is pertinent to you know, but they have these videos of them revisiting trees they've worked on for 15, 20 years. You know, this guy, Glenn Blair, I think, arborist on YouTube, amongst many really cool arborists. But he does these really lengthy, awesome talks about pruning cuts he's made and trees and the physiological nature of them. And so you can get the best teaching that no one would ever have access to across the whole globe right now because of the internet. And so anyone can learn this stuff.
Totally.
No one taught me about trees until I was this age, right after COVID, at all. No one told me. So I knew nothing. I knew deciduous. And, you know, I knew some words from school, but it didn't stick with me because I'm not using it. In an hour or 2 hours of time, you can know so much about your tree. Basic pruning practices,
yeah,
the basic,
you're right,
physiological nature of them without getting too advanced.
And then imagine 500 hours like you've done probably.
No,
you know,
probably not. Maybe
you haven't.
No. I learned what I needed to, and then I got
no I'm saying like in the field though, right? That's part of learn. I think learning is practice. Yeah. Practicing is learning. Learning is
maybe
practice.
Like I'm maybe I'm getting there. Okay. I might be getting there.
But what have you learned? 100. That's what I was getting at. What have you learned?
So when I started learning about trees, first, a lot of what I was learning was the work of tree trimming. And I started very quickly realizing that it's a very machismo world. It's a lot of it's filled with felons, you know, ex-cons, which I have no problems with. They're all awesome guys, but they're very manly. They're like, get the job done, go, go, go. And they're like cutting with pole saws. They're clearing your stuff out. Sometimes they can give you a good price because they're fast, but a lot of these cuts we do, if they're not done intentionally, cause problems on our tree. So when you're doing a pole saw cut on a limb and it's jumping around because you're holding this 15-foot pole and you're making little cuts in the bark next to your wound, it's causing a really hard time for that tree to heal. And while it's trying to heal in this weird way, it's going to have an irregular amount of sprouts if it wasn't trimmed correctly. And so the biggest thing is how we prune our limbs. There's two ways to really prune a limb if I'm going to break it down basically. We'll use my body as an example. So I'm the tree. This is a limb coming off the tree. If I cut the limb at my elbow, the energy of the tree is going to flow down the branch. It's going to get to this dead end, like a 95 exit, and it's going to be a traffic jam. It's going to want to push that energy out, and it's going to make epicormic growth, they call it. It's a giant amount of sprouts come out of the end of this branch. Which you can do, but you really have to revisit it in 6 months, 8 months' time, and select which branches coming off of that you want to keep and prune the other ones. No one's doing that.
No one's doing that.
When a guy does a prune cut and he just cuts a limb out of your way, and you're like, oh, nice, it's off the roof. You don't realize that in 6 months, 8 months time, you're going to have this giant nest of branches. And then years down the road, if you don't mess with it, you're going to have an unweighted branch, like an unevenly weighted branch that's super heavy and that's dangerous to your property now. Also, what can happen is the wound doesn't heal correctly out there because of this epicormic growth. And it becomes, the tree freaks out and it tries to pinch it off at its base, and it lets this become decay. You see decaying branches on trees all the time because they break, they snap, which is kind of like an improper prune. Stuff eats away at the branch, and then over time, it kind of heals up around the base of where it comes out of. But some trees have a harder time with that. A lot of our oaks, laurel oaks, have a really hard time. Live oaks do a little better. Pine isn't even something that grows out of a cut. Like, there is no new sprouts out of a pine. So
pines are weird, right?
Yeah, and they can have issues with their cuts too. The rot can get into them pretty bad. And so this idea that people are pruning your trees, but not pruning them back to what we call the bridge collar, which is this kind of like rough area of bark that looks different. The pattern is more rough. It's like a visible line. If you don't cut back close to that, you're going to have this weird problem down the line. But if you're going to get rid of a branch that's in an area you don't want, you really want to take it back to here. And anyone that's on the 95 of the tree knows not to get off at that exit because there's a closed sign right there at the exit.
At the ridge collar.
And so at the bridge collar, yeah.
Bridge collar.
And there's great diagrams online, very simple, that show you where the bridge collar is. And as long as you get close to that and you keep your cut from being a giant open face and you keep it as small as you can, the tree will heal. And it does a very good job healing. And so these pruning cuts almost are the essence of all tree care. What I see now is people are topping trees and doing cuts that aren't proper. And a lot of what you'll see is a cut from the top of the branch with no bottom cut, and it'll peel a branch. And so there'll be a, right where they cut it near the tree, there'll be this giant bark peel.
Yes.
Anytime that you're going to make a cut on a tree and it's going to be more open exposure than you want, you're going to have more problems. So if you have a peel, if you have a giant break, if you have a really big cut that's a big oval because you wanted to get it right close to the tree rather than doing like a more 90 degree angle out here, you're going to make it harder for the tree to heal, giving it more time to dry up, more time to create a cavity, more time for things to move in, and more time for things to not ever want to move out. And you could change the life of a tree from 300 years to 80 years.
You're right, brother.
Yeah,
this is like agroforestry talk too, because this is like pruning trees. That's all they do. And one thing I heard about that, like the peeling, like you said, when you take down a branch and it starts to peel, Reese, shout out Reese, who I met him at a Tiago's workshop.
Nice.
On agroforestry, and he's done a bunch of these maintenance, worked on a lot of these permaculture food forests doing maintenance. And when he goes and prunes, he does a cut on the underside. You know, he's like, hey, always remember to do a cut on the underside. That's when you cut and it's coming down, it doesn't just snap. And
yeah, you want to take the weight off the branch before you make a cut. Because when there's enough weight on a branch and you start to take, it'll peel away. So
that's
you don't have to do
the weight off.
You don't have to do an undercut when you're cleaning up your cut, actually. You just kind of want to, you can even do a weird crappy peel cut far out, but you got to get rid of weight, chop into chunks. Undercut is what you should do. But when you get close and there's only like a couple pounds of pressure, you can cut through anyway and you're not going to have a big issue. And any small prunes should be done with a handsaw. A lot of my pruning that's, you know, smaller than my forearm is usually done with my handsaw because it's just going to make it easier. It's a cleaner cut. If chainsaws aren't sharpened, you're making a really rough coarse cut. You just want to have someone that's intentional about the pruning of your tree, because it will create so many more problems for you in the future. And the basic premise for anyone that's watching that just wants to basically take care of the trees is this. If you get someone that just cuts your tree and doesn't understand how to prune it correctly, you're going to need someone every 6 months to 8 months, maybe a year. But if you have someone that prunes it correctly, you don't need someone for years. And a lot of us will charge the same amount of money. And if we charge a little more, you're going to save it and not having someone come back every 8 months to keep this nasty, bushy mess under control.
I love it, man. Yeah, and by the way, be safe too. We're not saying go out and do anything. Like, Pat's super safe with it, with rock climbing gear and all the things. So
yeah. Oh, that's why I brought up the machismo aspect of this. A lot of these guys are I had to start my own business because I'm not like go getter enough to like hustle. I run out of steam pretty quick. I go slow. All my movements are pretty slow, but I think it's important. And I wish more people did it. People die. You know, we had someone die recently in power lines. It happens a lot. People fall out of trees, break their backs, break bones, and it doesn't have to be that way.
You're just exactly right.
Take your time. Learn the tree, become intentional with the tree. Each tree has a different breaking point and a different structure, and it becomes a spiritual thing. I also want to recommend anyone looking for some type of entrepreneurial business to get into. There's a lot of tree work out there, and a lot of people are going to be wanting real soon to find people that are doing it correctly. And everyone's spiking trees and topping them and doing hideous stuff right now. So it's real easy to talk your way into a gig these days if you know just the basics. People love learning. When I get a quote and I just start explaining things, they're like, oh, this is awesome. They love it. They don't know.
They want to be empowered. They don't know, right? They're like, I have this huge oak tree. What do I do?
And these are the biggest living things around us.
Rice.
We're all walking through our life, driving through our life, and the biggest animal that's around you, they're like elephant size, are these giant trees everywhere you go.
Just
and
take it for granted. Thank
we
you,
We are
bro.
Just like...
Thank you.
So get into them, and your life will become a constant flow state. Once you love trees, everywhere you'll go, you have a game to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good, Pat.
Trees are sick.
I have one more question before we go, because I know we got to go.
Okay.
Pat, what would you say to someone who's like, I don't, like, we're hurting the tree. I don't want to touch the tree. I don't want to kill the tree. What would you say to
them? They're saying that for what reason? Like, someone wants to cut it?
Like, someone wants to cut, the husband wants to cut down the tree and she doesn't want to.
Oh,
or
well.
Something like that.
Well, first we got to string the husband up, you know, by his ankles and probably do like some form of pinata torture. That's the only way I've found that you can really beat that kind of thinking out of someone.
Okay.
So I do that. It's an extra fee. It's not too much. It's like $150, and we can kind of just tie your spouse up to a tree and
it's reasonable.
Hit him with sticks until change occurs. But I would say most of what it comes from is not understanding the benefits of the tree. As soon as I tell some, like, you know, stubborn guy that wants like leaves not in his pool that this tree is like a live oak, for example, or a pine or a palm. These are our natives. All the healthy animals that maybe eat you find something they don't like and you can train them, like mosquitoes. You know, you're going to want these things around to eat mosquitoes or eat larvae. You're going to want your soil to not dry up. You want the shade from the tree. You want to save money on your electric bill. The shade, this tree can grow over your house in a healthy way and you can keep it low. And when it falls, you won't have any issue if it does damaging your home. There's ways to explain the benefits of these trees, whether it be fruit that comes from it, whether it be the mycological help that some people are trying to grow other stuff, right? When you explain the oak's going to help that, or you could start a whole nursery under this oak, or that the oak isn't really a problem at this distance from your house. More of a ficus would be infrastructural problem, and oak is healthy. You start to realize that they come around. They just don't know anything about it. To them, it's a thing in the way, and as soon as they realize that it's like, this is rare to even have this big of a tree, this adds property value, it starts clicking in their head. It's just that we lack the awareness of the benefits that come. So teach people about the benefits of whatever thing that they're trying to get rid of. And sometimes there's valid reasons to get rid of it. And
boom. Yeah, there you go.
Someone wants to put a driveway in, it's fine. There's plenty of trees.
It's context.
But I regularly turn down work if it's...
I love it. But also be intentional and teach them why maybe we shouldn't remove it. We should...
When someone's offering me $1,000 to remove a tree and I say I'd rather not, they're like, why?
Yeah.
And then I explain to them and they're like, okay. So you're telling me I could prune this and I could keep some leaves out of the pool and we can keep the tree? I'm like, yeah. And they do it.
Yeah.
But you got to hold your line. And if you don't feel like it's an ethical removal of a species, you know, if you don't want to kill that organism and cut it all the way down because you don't feel good about the reason, then say no. And in that, you'll be educating someone on why it's so important to you.
Thank you, Pat. Yeah, because a lot of landscapers don't question it.
And they're making money, and that's okay because they're trying to survive. But this is the time. Be the change you wish to see in the world. Live a little cheaper. make these changes, and through those changes, people will learn.
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. man. And not only that, just work on more conscious, high impact jobs that are, you know, like, cause I get that a lot with my gardens. I know we got to get out of here, but, yeah. Anyways, doing stuff that like I'm not into. It's like, hey,
yes,
this is what we're here to do. This is the vision of the future.
Anybody, just try to do something you're passionate about, and it's going to resonate so well. Hell yeah.
Let's end on that, Pat. You're the man. Thank you for coming, brother.
Yeah, we'll do it again, hopefully.
Let's do it again.
Number 50. Yeah.
Number 50, baby.
Potential. Exponential. All right, dude.
This is the best.
I love you, man.
Yeah, I love you too,
Thank
brother.
You.